This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay, so let's resume. Yeah, we're gonna discuss this now. Do you want to? So stay for that, and then you can duck out. Yeah. Okay, so we're gonna get started. And what I want to do now is make sure that we can look at the sub-questions we've identified within our existing discussion papers, and in light of our work thus far, make sure that our sub-questions relate to the scope and mandate of the review. And if things need to be refined, maybe we can get the group think on how to refine things. So the first topic deals with consumer trust. Awareness of the new GTLDs, and this is Carlton. This is your. These are your sub questions, Cao and Calvin are in the room too. Your teammates. So I want us to take a quick look at this. And make sure that these are still the right questions to be asking. And I realize that, you know, some of this work may be done when we return, and we have the opportunity to think about things even more. But I thought we would at least spend a little bit of time now with each discussion paper and the sub questions to make sure that these are the right questions to be asking. So I put it to the group to look at these questions now and provide some feedback to Carlton, or Carlton, if you have thoughts on it as well, about these questions. So do you want to start, Carlton?
No. I'm just telling you the context. These came from my own intuit. So sure. Anybody, please help me here.
So do we want to start with Carlton's teammates, if either Calvin or Chao have any input as to these sub-questions?
Calvin here. This certainly looks like Nielsen stuff on the consumer side, obviously. I haven't spent too much time on that report. Don't know if anyone else has.
Sorry, we can start the recording now. I wasn't clear, so we can resume the recording, and I'll introduce things again. Apologies. So we are now resuming the Consumer Trust and Safeguards sub-team session, and we're going to focus on the discussion papers that have been drafted by the teammates and taking a look at the sub-questions that people have identified in their papers and asking ourselves in light of our review of the scope and mandate and our discussions about reordering our topics and refining the language, whether there's further refinement then that needs to be done to our sub-questions in light of these previous discussions. A real focus on the scope and mandate. So now the floor is open, and Calvin, you were making a comment, I believe, about the Nielsen data going to these questions of consumer awareness of new GTLDs.
Yes, Calvin here. That's true. Basically, this looks like a Nielsen consumer report data point. Just having a look at some of the sub-questions there, it certainly does seem like what we need to do and throw out that report.
Chao, did you have any comments?
Thank you. I think my comment would have been about outreach, specifically looking at developing countries, but I think that would be probably covered in the sub-question, are there any weaknesses in the methodology? So, maybe.
So, Carlton, can you explain, when you reference methodology, what do you mean by that?
Gal picked up on it. If you look at the data set that was used by Nielsen, certainly from where we sit, the representation in developing economies was not represented, and I say this in light of, if you look at what the intent was of the new GTLD, is to get those who were not already in the system brought into the system. So I saw the methodology. If you look at, take a closer look at the methodology to see whether or not there was sufficient room to get more of the responses from the developing economies.
So then I understand your first two questions then to really go to the data set that we have. Have
right.
we heard from a representative, have we heard from a group of responsors to the survey, people who respond to the survey, who are representative of the world at large, and especially the developing community.
Right. So they have some regional data. He has some regional data. So you look deeper into the regional data to see where some of the issues of voter awareness kind of pan out. Well, my first cut of it is that the way they reach out to them would impact what they get back. That is my first set of that. So that's why the methodology. Oh, they're looking at only people online. They're looking at people who had bought a domain name and so on, and not all consumers. So that was one thing. Then there is another set of data, and you have to. It's qualified because there's an operator who has some strings. And they went into the market looking at how consumers are responding to their strings. And there's a slight difference in the data. And that's the one that the last that I quoted for it. I thought that was interesting because it shows quite a bit of variation in their data set. Their own email. This is an operator that owns four or five of the top TLDs, email, several others. So they went out and said, the data from Nielsen shows that these people that know more, they more of them know about our strings than others. And so they said, the reason why they know more about our strings than others is because of what we did to raise awareness of them.
Right, and I saw that in your paper.
Right.
And so,
sorry, thank you. Thank you, Calvin. So what is that a source that's on our wiki page, or is that a source that you know about?
And
No. Put on your microphone.
Yeah. I have the source, and I gathered the source. But I did not put it on the wiki page yet because, of course, we wanted to circulate it among the staff, our group, and then before we put all of that on the wiki page. But I have the source.
So what is the source? Was this a study that the dot email folks have done? Or
yes, it's a study.
Oh, okay.
They did a study.
Right. So I would.
And I have the data.
Great. So I think we should put that, as long as it's public, of course.
It's public.
Yeah. So let's put it on the wiki page so that it's the source that everyone has access to.
Yeah, but what it did was they followed on from the Nielsen data.
Uh-huh.
From the first Nielsen data,
right.
And they said, look. It shows that our strings are better known than others. And they said, here's why our strings are better known. And they went back. We had it on buses. We had it on radio. We had,
mm-hmm.
And so on. And that's about awareness and all
mm-hmm.
that awareness. So that's why I thought it was important.
Yeah, I think that is important.
Yes.
So my observation, and I think this is something you and I had communicated about, is that I think the issues about the data and how robust it is or how robust it is not are certainly issues that we should reference, but that I wouldn't lead off with them, because I think just in terms of a narrative, I think we have to start with the substantive questions about awareness, and then if you want to have a sub-discussion about concerns about the data and perhaps not enough outreach to the full spectrum of survey responders who we would like to hear from, I think that's a valid issue, but I think it has to come, Okay, so Is this a document that we can edit in real time, Alice? Yeah. But you can presto changeo, we can get to a document. Because that way we'll be able to capture our discussion and also go back to Fabro's insights about the PICs. I also want to loop back to that when it comes up. So you let us know when we're ready to get that document in an editable format is the word I'm looking for. Right, editable as opposed to edible. True.
So while we're waiting to edit it, I was just thinking we could talk through maybe how to revamp some of the sub-questions. Now that we're acknowledging that the any critique of the methodology will just be incorporated into that discussion. And so, we already have the Nielsen data, which will answer to what extent consumers are aware of new GTLDs. And so I'm almost wondering if the big question maybe we might want it to be, to what extent are consumers aware of the new GTLDs? And then for sub-questions, you might have one that might be a comparison to the awareness of legacy GTLDs. And then another one that might be about what factors have contributed to this awareness. Break that down. Yeah, I'm just trying to break them up into actual individual questions rather than from the discussion we just had. And then what other questions did you have in mind? Okay. So I'm thinking of changing the big one to what extent.
Yeah, I think.
Because that sets up the deck.
Right.
For the other two.
I think that's.
And then you say, well, what is the.
My microphone.
Oh, sorry. Yes, so I agree with to what extent, if you put the preface on that.
Can we both
question?
Make that bigger?
It sets
Alice?
Up the deck. And then you say, what is the awareness of legacy versus new? And then you have a comparison. We have that. And then you go to what factors might have influenced the awareness. Yes?
Then you could, because then you could get into the discussion you just brought up as to whether or not there were roles played by the registries themselves versus by ICANN and whatnot.
Right.
And that would go into those factors.
Fabro.
Oh, sorry. No. Fabro, for the record, I was just looking here at the Nielsen survey just for the how they structure, and maybe some ideas for what's the evidence and how compare is it. The first one should be the average awareness, which is a clear number we have. And then they have the total awareness, difference between them being the first one is the percentage and the second one is the degree, the graduation.
You're on different topics.
Yeah?
So when Carlton is talking about the evidence and how compelling is it, he is, as I understand it, you're talking about the Nielsen study itself, which is why I suggested making those sub-points. So he's not talking about the substantive issue. He's talking about a possible critique of the data we have. So let's, in terms of editing, and then I'll loop back to you, Fabro, because I think you still have substantive comments to say on this.
No.
But for editing purposes, let's take those two, what is the evidence and how, let's take the evidence and how compelling it is and are there any weaknesses. Let's flip that to the bottom for now, and then let's start incorporating some of Drew's suggestions as points one and two. actually 1, 2, and 3, I think, and get those down, and then Fabro, I think you're going to have some input based on that. That's what I'm
yeah.
hearing. But let's get that down first, so we can deal with that. No, Alice. I'm sorry, I wasn't clear. For this is all going on number one, and those that language that you just pasted, that should just go as the last point to number one. If you just do an arrow back as to what you pasted, just get that back there. Right, that's exactly what I wanted. Perfect. So now, Drew, can you repeat then your suggestions as a possible framework of sub-questions?
Yes. So Alice, could you please edit the big question for number one, are consumers aware of new GTLDs? Just add in front of that, just add to what extent are consumers aware of new GTLDs? And then the first sub-question under that should be, so I guess.
What is the awareness of legacy versus new GTLDs?
And I'll say it for the microphone. What are the levels of awareness of new GTLDs versus legacy GTLDs? And then the next sub-question would be, what factors might have contributed to the levels of awareness?
So that means the evidence part. So think the evidence of subject.
Microphone problem.
Take the evidence part of what I had originally. Those three questions address the evidence in a more succinct way.
Right, and we can even keep the third question, what steps might be necessary to increase awareness.
Yeah, so keep that.
So maybe make that.
And then we have the ones there that we just shifted to the bottom.
So that would be C and... I just think DEF for those remaining questions. But Fabra, you had some suggestions. Go ahead, Fabra.
Yeah, I like this. I like this breakdown between what the evidence says. So now we look at the evidence, say what kind of recommendations. I mean, what's the quality of evidence and what recommendations we can do. On the first part, what about the evidence? I notice here just looking at Nielsen surveys, they discuss total awareness in general, and then legacy and GTLDs. Region is something that might be important to address here, or we just leave it to readers of the Nielsen survey. They address geo-targeted GTLDs as well. Different types of consumers. That might be something you want to break down. And they do address the uses, not only being aware, but aware and being satisfied with it, and aware and registering or using it, which I don't think we should end at this point.
Microphone.
Look at the details that I have in the paper. You would see the first three bits addressed. So I don't believe we should go into the use at all for this.
I agree.
Yeah.
That was it.
And I think in light of having changed the question, we could also have sub-question D ask what role does ICANN play in increasing awareness of new GTLDs to consumers.
This is Drew for the record. So instead of does ICANN have a role, ask what role
does it play?
Yes.
Okay. So assume that there is a role and just ask what role.
Yes.
Okay.
If there is a role, I think the what question asks if there's a role, what is it? Rather than as,
Well, how about what I would... What I would suggest as a refinement, sorry, I'm talking over you. What I would suggest as a refinement is keep it as, does ICANN play a role? And then as a subpoint, if so, what role? That way to capture it and not to suppose that there's a role. Great mind. Fabra.
Fabra. I'm thinking about question 1B. What factors might have contributed to the level of awareness? I remember the discussion we had yesterday about China, which points to the sensitive details of the methodology used to collect data from China, the dimension of it, who responds, and so on. Do we need to, or should we go to factors at that point? I'm thinking about the structure of the report. If you go to the beginning, before the other two parts, we're going to have other parts to discuss factors and to speculate what might play a role. So the first role, the first bit should be more descriptive of what the reality is based on the data we have that is sensible because it's based on use and data. Or if you bring to the bottom, then we're going to have factors to discuss because we're going to have discussed the safeguards, we're going to have discussed specs, 11, and so on. So my point is, should we have the question B? I mean, to discuss it, I love it. But do we have data and can we provide an answer for that based on the nuisance data?
This is Drew for the record. It doesn't see your point because then we can look at that as far as what factors might have contributed to these statistics about awareness versus might have contributed to awareness. But I do think we still need to make sure we're at least assuming that the data is valid to an extent because it's still the best data we have to go by.
Yeah.
And we still have to have a section that is looking at the factors that would have contributed to awareness. And that type of analysis would be something that would look at, the communication ICANN did to applicants on the radio, everything perhaps from that to marketing campaigns to oriented toward registrants, such as what Carlton was referencing and all that. So I don't know that we would want to explore the factors of the methodology under that same heading. I almost think that should still stay its own discrete topic.
So I'm going to ask Drew if you can – I have to duck out for no more than 10 minutes, but probably less. I'm going to ask Drew to take over as a facilitator and ask you just to continue with this, and I will duck back in very shortly.
Yes, this is Carlton for the record. I agree with Drew. You want to have the factors there, and they have identified the factors in the nuisance study. And one of the reasons why it's good to address the factors at that level is because when we look at methodology, we would see where some of the factors that another study has indicated was important to the level of awareness that they saw for their GTLDs. That is the point where you get to kind of compare them. So I would agree with you that it should stay there.
Yeah, what are you thinking, Fabro? Do you agree? Or?
Agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then do we think we need any more questions here or even sub-questions in the same way we made a sub-question for – a sub-sub-question for D? Is there anything else that will help us? Because, as we go away from here, these are going to become independent investigative tasks that we're all going to be taking on to answer these. So – Is there anything further we need to break down, or that would help us to identify additional sources? Hopefully we don't need additional sources because we spent the morning session going over that, but is there anything, any other questions that you think we need?
Ms. Garland, for the record, can you think, I'm just thinking E no longer needs to be there because what we just did was to expand E. So we can remove E.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if D is not a sub-question.
Fabro, for the record.
Fabro, for the record. I'm wondering if D is not a sub-question of C. So what steps might be necessary? One of the steps is checking if icon has a role and what role it is. It is a separate question or is it a sub-question? Yeah?
This is Drew, for the record. But should D actually go before C? Because would one of the potential steps necessary be, might include, oh, if only ICANN did such and such.
Fabio, for the record, I would say to don't put ICANN first, because the necessary steps may include ICANN or others. Our goal or mandate is to analyze mostly ICANN. So maybe we can make a choice here. If you go with ICANN, we look at ICANN and see what kind of other actors could help ICANN to achieve goals. If you go the other way around, we address the DNS system, and ICANN is one of the parts. Yeah.
Okay, so from this standpoint, and of course once this becomes actual chapters and paragraphs, organizationally, things can get moved around a bit, but you're thinking from a research standpoint right now, answering C and going through and answering that, that's okay even if there ends up being overlap. Because I guess what I'm wondering is if C, what if you're looking at steps that might be necessary the way it is currently worded to expand awareness. So maybe one of the steps that might be necessary would be that ICANN should run this type of ad campaign on these platforms and doing this when there are new GTLDs added to the root zone. But then on D, maybe you would find out, oh, well, ICANN did do some of that. So is that, you're still thinking that's okay for that overlap? Oh, and David.
Yeah. Thanks, Drew. David. I was just wondering whether we shouldn't come in that order, and did ICANN play a sufficient role in promoting increased awareness, and then what steps might be necessary to expand it, ICANN or other, because, I mean, we've got a question, ICANN did promote it previously in UGCLE, so isn't that a data point which we've got? We've got the number of outreach, we've got the number of things, so we've got data for that, and then we look, so we've past and then future. So that would flip the ICANN first because we're looking at that as the data point we've got.
I would agree with that, putting ICANN first because we do know that ICANN did play a role, and that's part of the program. So, but Carlton, what's your main fear if we do that as to what would happen to C?
If you formulate the question, said, did ICANN, as David said, then that changed the complexion, and I could see it go ahead of what factors. So it's based on the reformulation of D. I could see it fitted in that run.
So real quick, and then Carlos will be next. This is Drew for the record. So you would support changing D to did ICANN have a role in promoting increased awareness? If so, what role? So it would still be that, the same sub-question. And then we would put that above C. Okay, and then Carlos. And then after Carlos, Calvin. I think I saw your hand.
Yes, just listening to the discussion, when I look at the head title, we're talking about new GTLDs. When we talk about ICANN, you rightly pointed to the program. So I think we're going around the question because we seem to be looking at two different things at the same time. Are we talking at just new GTLDs, which was a straight question of the survey? Do you know any new GTLDs and so on? And then we have the rollout of the program, application, delegation, and so on, which is like the standard view that we have of the process that is, of course, ICANN's responsibility. So when we talk about ICANN, are we talking about the overall awareness of new GTLDs as a program? Or are we talking, let's promote XYZ? I see a problem there. So in this chapter, we're overall talking about the program. It would be good to change it in the title.
The program, but not... the new GTLD program, but the new GTLDs themselves in that program versus other parts where we're referring to the program and we're talking about the program that ushered in a new era of safeguards and all these other...
No, the point is, the survey asks, are you aware of any new GTLD?
Right.
It's a very pointed question. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we have the program, the whole package, and so on. And here we have both. In this segment, we are jumping from one to the other.
Well, but the program would be related, potentially related to the levels of awareness with the new GTLDs themselves.
Of course, but I think that ICANN, we should look at ICANN not as a promoter of single GTLDs.
No. Yeah.
Use the mic.
Well, then make it clear.
And Calvin had a point next, and then Favreau.
Then make it clear.
Calvin here. So changing the does to did means that sounds like it means that ICANN no longer has a role in promoting increased awareness. I'm not sure that that's correct.
I'm sorry, could you clarify that point?
Yeah, if you change the does to did ICANN, ICANN may still have a role going forward, and you know we kind of taken that away, so I'm not so sure that that's the best thing to do.
Favreau first, and then David.
Yeah, Favreau for the record. My question is, also, my comment is also about the ICANN on the D. Because maybe we should define better what kind of ICANN we're addressing. ICANN as a whole, the new GTLD program, or specific promotion of GTLDs and so on. My suggestion would be that we stick to the GTLD program, because then it would be way easier to address. Otherwise, we need to look to all stakeholders or all the related programs and so on, and we go mental.
Yeah.
So, oh, I'm so sorry. I talk loud enough. Yes. So that was what Carlos was suggesting, Fabro. So Carlos says that we should be specific about it. So we said GTLD program, right, Carlos? You would approve of that?
In the case of ICANN.
Yes. Yes. You would approve of that change.
And
the question that Calvin was asking, Calvin, my understanding, you were saying that we are changing the tense and making ICANN role
in the past and not look to the future. Is that it?
Potentially, yes.
Ah.
Or only in the past. Which,
well, maybe David?
David, for the record, as I suggested, that move and the tense change, that was to flip D before C, which would make it logical. So it was, did I can have a role in promoting increased awareness by consumers? And then the next one becomes what steps might be necessary to expand, increase that role of ICANN or other. So that was my point of flipping it around.
And I think if we do that, if we change that to did, as David suggested, and then we flip C and D as I suggested, then I think we could then create a sub-question for C that would be what role should ICANN play? Or what is ICANN's role? So we're still going back and looking at that exact issue and the role that ICANN should play with this. So we're looking historically what role did they play in this, and then we're looking at necessary steps to expand and increase awareness, knowing that one of those might be, you know, a certain type of role for ICANN.
Does that make sense? So is everyone comfortable with that? Yes? Okay, so Alice, can you, Drew, why don't you map that?
So Alice, please switch C and D. And then change C to did ICANN have a role? And then under D, add a sub-question. What role should ICANN play? Or do you guys want it to be, what is ICANN's role?
Yeah, well, that is the future part.
Yeah.
So you take care of the future first.
Okay.
And we remove E.
Farmer, for the record, we're not looking at a current structure, but maybe a note to written later that we will have to explain the methodology of nuisance somewhere, and the competition team will have to do it as well. So maybe above the sections we write, we're going to have a joint piece on where we explain what the nuisance data is. Otherwise, we need to keep repeating here.
Sure. I don't think we need to tackle that now, but I think logistically you're absolutely right. When pen comes to paper, the Nielsen study will have to be introduced so that the readers understand, you know, what that is. So are folks happy with this sequence of sub-questions on this topic, Drew?
Drew, for the record, so the only thing I want to note is that we should once again be careful in what we mean by consumers and how we're going to tackle registrants versus end users, and also whether we want to consider applicants in this area too. So I guess traditionally we're thinking of consumer as end users and registrants, but then the awareness question then sparks the applicant's question too. So
I think we touched on this yesterday, and I think where we ended up, based on our discussions in the room, and I think some of the points Jonathan made, is that for this discussion, we are really talking about end users. When we move on to our other, why am I getting an echo? Okay. No worries. when we move on to other topics, I will be looking at end users and registries and registrars separately or distinctly, but for this one, we are talking about end users. I think that's where we ended up yesterday. Does that make sense?
Yes. So then to clarify, then we'll only use the end user study that was called the consumer study from Nielsen for this one, in addition to whatever other evidence we bring in. But, okay, great.
Yeah. So we'll just be clear with our terminology when this is being written up. Go ahead, Carlton.
Yes, Carlton, for the record, just to follow up on Carlos's note on C, you want to say consumers of the new GTLD program.
Right. That's correct. Yes. So Alice has that. I know there's just a delay. Barbara.
I'm thinking about question E, and we're gonna see it in all the papers. It might be a smart move or not. I think it's a smart move. But we're asking, are there any weaknesses in methodology that might impact this liability? That's a very strong question to ask for all the papers, because we're going to use always different kind of data. I think it is, we could say, are there any known weakness? Because then we have to preempt the key suspects and methodology. My question then is, how could those be addressed? Although we can speculate on how to address it, probably the public in general has a better idea of how that could be addressed, because it might be too much to try to preempt how to address it. But the first part, I think, is strategic.
Drew.
This is Drew for the record. I think that's a terrific point. And actually, I would support omitting the question, but instead taking it upon ourselves to always address this question in our recommendations for each section, because I think there's going to be some sections where maybe our recommendations are less about the methodology, because we feel more comfortable that we have enough evidence to make some procedural recommendation or whatnot about what I can't do going forward. But for something like this, it might be that since we're focused on something as nebulous as awareness, it might be that our recommendation is that a study should be conducted that also incorporates variables X, Y, and Z and whatnot. So,
and that's precisely why I wrote it that way.
So, and I know you mentioned, that we should be taking a critical look at this stuff. So then do you support just assuming we always take a critical look and that goes in recommendations rather than that being a distinct element we're exploring?
Well, I thought we would want to look at that as a distinct element here. And I tell you why. Because if you look at what it is that we're saying, weaknesses in methodology, then if you identify the weaknesses, I think it would be almost cowardly to kind of run away from making direct recommendations.
This is Drew for the record. I'm not suggesting we run away from making those recommendations. Instead, I'm suggesting organizationally that section doesn't relate to the big question we're trying to answer until we find out, until we've gone through all these sub-questions. And that alone, going through that, I think will point out holes in the methodology. So then in the recommendation section, that's where we would take that on and say, one recommendation is for a study to be conducted that does this, 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 and this, because these were the flaws or these were the weaknesses or the limitations of the data we had this time around. Because we're making recommendations for a future review team, so that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So it doesn't
okay.
come across as too academic.
Yeah.
Academic analysis.
It's okay.
I think this is Laureen. I think that's a good approach, because as we're dealing with data, we're all going to have views about strengths and weaknesses of the data. That is somewhat of an expertise also. I mean, there's a whole industry that pokes holes in studies and points out flaws. As a litigator, I know this, the battle of the experts. But I tend to agree with Drew that to the extent we want to raise issues about concerns with the study, I think it, you know, we can decide how and in what manner we want to do that. But it's not really a sub question, so to speak, although it may be a topic that's included in the sub question, and it certainly may be a topic that's included in the recommendations if we think that the data hasn't been complete enough to inform our views at this point. So I like Drew's recommendation of taking it out as a sub question, but keeping it in mind as we look at all the data. I think you raise an important topic, Carlton.
Yeah, you know, the end game is the same. It's how I get to it. So that's okay.
Yeah, I just want to say, so let's take that out, and then let's remember for every single topic we're covering, when we get to recommendations, this should be at the top of our minds with any of these things, because in addition to the recommendations we're going to be giving to the community before a future round, also our recommendations are going to help inform future review teams and how, you know, this work can get better so that as a community we can get better at accountability and whatnot. So I think we should absolutely keep that at the forefront for every topic for the recommendation section.
We're all guilty of not using the microphones. So unless we have further discussion on this topic, because I really do want to try and move through these topics so we get all of them covered, let's move on to the consumer trust issues. So can I close out the consumer awareness issues, at least for now? If we need to revisit, we can revisit, but for now, let's move on to consumer trust. So here we have a long list of sub-questions that people probably are familiar with, having hopefully read the paper. I think this was the model paper, so everyone has read it. Hooray. So do folks have feedback on these sub-questions or suggestions for refinement to make sure that it fits within our scope? That's the topic on the table. Feedback on the sub-questions to make sure that it fits within our scope, that it's logical, et cetera. David.
David, just for consistency, because we talk about GTLDs throughout, I noticed in number one you've got TLDs.
No, I'm sorry, you're right.
Which then just makes me think, oh, we are talking about CCTLDs as well. And then it starts raising questions. That was it. I'm presuming you meant GTLDs.
Yes, that's a typo. Thank you.
Hal. This is Hal for the record. I'm just trying to find a way we can link this question to the previous question. Or can we assume that because they're under the same umbrella, they're already linked?
And I think that's a fair question that we're probably going to be struggling with as we piece this report together. And what I would say is, as this gets more developed, I think the linkages will be clear and we can handle it in the narrative, but you raise an important point. We're going to need to link these up. And I will observe that my reading of the Nielsen study data shows that to a certain extent there's an intersection between awareness and familiarity and trust, that the more the public uses a TLD, uses a GTLD, they may tend to trust it more. So I think we'll be able to make that linkage. Yeah.
And the converse is true. The more they trust it, the more they can use it.
Right, right. So I think we'll be able to do that. I mean, I think the data will help us there as well. Right. Other feedback on this sequence of questions, and if folks need it, we can scroll down through, and then David.
Yes, I was wondering, in this outline, where do you think we would best be able to discuss, and it might be actually under number two, I don't know, where would we best be able to discuss what David from Nielsen brought up about the fact that above all, consumers are concerned about the content of the website itself and whether that looks suspicious.
So maybe a sub B, do consumers trust certain GTLDs? Maybe for now as a placeholder, why, what factors? I mean, I think that's where it would go. It would be a sub B. And for now, I think we can put why, what factors, and refine that. But that gets at the concept. And just as a sub B there, Alice. Yeah. Did I see your hand up, Fabro?
Fabro, for the record.
Oh, I'm so scared. I don't know, you know. Oh, no. Barbara, let me capture David, who was waiting so patiently, albeit not silently.
Thanks, Lorraine. I was wondering whether we try and capture the question, which now I can't remember exactly how it's formulated, which was the one I raised about getting it into the Nielsen questionnaire, which is what's in there. The content, the name of it, remember, it's the dot, do you expect a film related under dot film. So I mean, I was there. Do consumers expect TLD related domains under specific GTLDs? That's my wording, but it should probably match the original question, which I can't look up because I'm not allowed to look on my computer. Did I get out of that?
I'll allow limited exceptions to look up sources that relate to the discussion at hand so long as the computer, Carlos, is closed thereafter. Right, and as I said, it's okay if folks need to duck out to take care of something that's time sensitive. I totally get it. Totally get it. I hear you. Maybe that is. I think that would fall under the question we just identified. Why do consumers trust certain GTLDs? Maybe as a sub under there, do your question about, which you've raised consistently, which I think is important. I'm wondering if it's a sub question or it's a separate standalone question. What is the relationship between the name of a GTLD and the extent to which consumers trust it or expect to have content? I'm flubbing with the exact formulation, but what I'm hearing you say is, how do we get at this trust factor, which relates to the relationship between the name of the GTLD and the content of the website that has that GTLD?
Yeah, thanks, David, for the record. Exactly, I think the pertinent point to me is expectations of consumers. So it's the expectation going to that TLD. And we did get that wording, so I did send that as the question to Lisa. So either I start plowing through the questionnaire.
No, that's not pertinent.
Or we find it. But we've got the wording, so I think we did refine it, and I got it
how it
should be.
And
I'll see if I can find it easily.
Drew, go ahead, and then Drew, then Carlton, then Carlos.
So that's Drew for the record. So David's point is exactly, I guess, what I was intending to cover with B. So I'm thinking that perhaps C should actually be a sub-question of B because we're going to be looking at the reasons why consumers trust certain specified GTLDs And from what we learned from the Nielsen survey, it looks like one of the reasons is going to be the relationship between a string and the content of the web page.
Right.
Right? So do you support
making
that a sub-question?
It could be different.
Or do you...
David, it could be different because its content is a separate discussion to the name.
Yeah.
But it could... It's related as well, so I think as long as we don't get ourselves confused on we have both in one question, we go down and cover one and forget the other one.
Right.
You see what I mean? So I'll try and find that question. Should we ask?
This gets at the concept. I think we can refine the wording, but what I want to capture here is the concept, which is in the Nielsen study, and that's the relationship between consumers' expectations of content based on the name of a GTLD, consumers' expectation of website content based on the name of the GTLD that website relates to. Yes? I can take you off the list. Okay. You're off the list. Okay. So I know you're looking for that question, David, but does this act as a placeholder for that concept? We can refine it, but I want to make sure this captures the concept.
David, for the record, yes.
Okay, good. Okay, Fabro.
Yeah, Fabro, for the record. Trust is something very hard to address. Awareness is easier. So maybe the question one, instead of why, we could use the expectation. What are the expectations of consumers with GTLDs? And then we have questions of what they think they are, what they expect to find. And then we have the question of trust, which would be if the expectation is met or not. And then we have a third question that might not be addressed here, which is the restrictions and enforcement, because the news service have questions on that that we could use here, we could use elsewhere. So I'm just thinking if it explains better, first, what do you expect? If you expect the expectation is met, if it's not met, what do you expect to happen? Someone enforce or restriction should exist?
Let me respond to that briefly, and then Carlos. The reason you see my facial expressions, I'm not a poker player. I am a poker player, but I don't have a poker face, which impedes my poker playing ability substantially. I think we have to map our mandate as a starting principle,
yeah.
And our mandate isn't to measure consumer expectations. It's to look at consumer trust and the extent to which the new GTLD program has promoted consumer trust. That's our specific mandate. Now, I agree with you that expectations certainly are relevant,
yep.
Crucial perhaps to these issues. But I don't think we start there. I think we get at the expectations, particularly because there's a lot of data in the Nielsen study that goes to what people expect. But I'm resistant to using that as a starting point because then I think we are straying away from our mandate. And I think this is more semantics than anything else. I think substantively, I'm on the same page with you. Yes, the difference between what consumers expect and what they get is very relevant to the issue of how apt consumers are to trust new GTLDs. I just don't want to start there in terms of our questions, because then I think we're starting for something that doesn't precisely reflect our mandate. Carlos.
Yes, I just want to add to that what Laureen said just before. When the Nielsen report opened, there was a general statement that the public was very positive about new GTLDs, looking for a better structure and looking for a better relationship between the top-level domain and what they were looking for, So that's for me very, very, very important. And then we go down how much is that awareness and how much is real trust and so on. But I think we are bounded by this condition that, well, I hope we are bounded by the condition that everybody's happy. Nobody's throwing stones against the program. Everybody has a very clear expectation, clarity or structure. And then we can discuss if trust comes before awareness or awareness before trust, or if there is a third term, I don't mind. But I just wanted to make this point, and I think for me it's very, very important. This is the departure. We're not going, trying to analyze from all sides. Thank you.
So I think that's a really good point, Carlos, to make sure in our narrative we are pointing to this finding that Nielsen has given us, i.e., what did you think the new GTLD program was for? Well, as a matter of fact, we thought it was to provide some more structure. That isn't the only thing that Nielsen found, but I think you're right. That's a good frame and a good springboard to introduce both the Nielsen study and then move on to our discussion of these specific questions about consumer trust.
May I add, although it was in the previous discussion about the methodology, there might be critiques to the methodology, but the initial idea of the Nielsen report was a baseline just to compare in the following years. It was chosen a long time ago, and of course there might be some critique to the methodology. For me, the Nielsen report is baseline year one, and let's hope there is a year two and year three. That just on the side.
Fabra, for the record, just an amendment. When I refer to expectation, it's not expectation with the program, but with the GTLDs. I expect to find it. I expect that it's useful. I expect it to be safe. Mm-hmm. In this way, so if I expect to be safe and it's not safe, then I don't trust.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever the expectation is, this is why the why. Why do consumers mm-hmm. visit? So it's not about the program itself.
Any more feedback? What do folks think about this question about distrust, which I saw data on in the Nielsen study? We don't have a discussion paper on it right now. It is in a sub-question right now. It struck me as something to consider. What do folks think about that? David,
for the record, I'll jump in on that and go first. I think it's a great thing to have because I think as we're going through all of this and we're looking at the data, we're going to find things in TLDs which we identify as things which are not helpful to consumers or contribute to distrust. So I think bringing those factors together in a separate paragraph, paper, chapter, whatever, makes a lot of sense. And I think it'll actually be something, you know, when you hear about new GTLDs and thinking out loud, when it would often be said, look at .cat, that's an existing TLD, this is what's good about it. You see people replicating that, and you see things, particularly in, you know, new GTLDs, where they've done something, they've put in extra rights protection mechanisms, which obviously brings more trust, and others which haven't, which are allowing and might not be, you know, some new GTLDs are actually policing their domains as well. So that whole thing, I think, if we can bring it out into something which, what contributes to distrust, that turns consumers away. So it eventually, goes to the detriment of that TLD. So I think it's very useful.
So unless there's an objection to that, I would propose this, for now, just putting it as sub-question 9. So it flows after this question about why do consumers avoid unfamiliar GTLDs. I would just put it as 9. It's not a subtopic, but that right now seems to be as logical a place as any.
And David, again, for the record, what a great question that would have been to have in the Nielsen.
I think they do have information on that.
Right.
Yeah, because that's what made me think about
okay,
it.
Okay, good.
There is information on that. I don't know if they ask that question precisely, but in fact they may, because I think that's what made me think about
okay.
it. I was reading it and thinking, we have all this data. We should be asking this question so that we can report that out. It's relevant to the issue of trust. It's the other side. So we'll have that as question 9. What factors contribute to distrust? Does that make sense, Alice? Okay. Yeah, it's already there. It's there as sub 4 as a consider. You can just move that up under sub 9. That's fine, too. Just delete then question 4 there. No, not that. No, stick. Don't do anything with that question 4. just scroll down to where you were before. Okay, and that just delete, because now we've captured it in sub-question 9. Okay, Fabro.
Amra, for the record. I'm just wondering, the question 7 is really good, because what makes a DTLD trustworthy is really important statement, because you're basically giving normative directions to where the program should go, what should be protected. So it's a very important question. The data provided there will be really strategically analyzed.
And maybe we put what factors contribute to distrust right after, and then have why do consumers avoid unfamiliar GTLDs as the last one. Drew?
Drew, for the record. Yeah, just a thought going through these that I just thought of is how are we going to incorporate the findings about end users utilizing search engines and social media platforms to access content. Because I think that is worth mentioning. In a sense, because it seems to potentially be because the search engine is, it's convenient, but it might also be trustworthy. I'm just wondering to what extent a trust factor might go into it. Clicking on the link on the search engine versus just typing in an unknown TLD string in a browser.
Maybe the 7A we can have what factors contributed to trust, and then below what factors contributed to distrust. And then, for example, I'm looking here at the Nielsen surveys. Why trust domains name industry more than others? And then they have reputation, and then they have extension appeal, usage, safety, and convenience. And then we can cross-tab this with other findings, and then we have factors that contributed to trust and factors that contributed to distrust, which will give us the main question, which is what makes them trustworthy.
Mm-hmm. So I just want
to... I would suggest to break down in 2 questions, A and B.
Okay.
What factors contributed to trust, and the below one?
Okay. Can we incorporate that, Alice? Yeah, that makes sense. So, thank you, Fabro. Getting back to your question, Drew, I'm struggling a little bit to figure out where that where that goes.
So obviously there's a whole separate issue that would be looked at by the competition group, not by us, dealing with that. What I'm thinking is, and I'd have to look back at the data again, I'm thinking there might be, it might be worth mentioning that there could be an enhancement of trust if the end user navigated to the GTLD by way of a search engine.
Okay.
That's what I'm seeing based on what we were learning yesterday during the presentation.
Right. So let's just add as a bracket sort of a reminder, and in this case a reminder to me, that when we ask the question, what factors contribute to trust, let's add as a sub-issue, so a little I, a method, you phrase it, Drew. Navigation method to website. Just how does navigation method impact on trust? Like that.
Yeah. So just so we could at least.
Yeah. This is just a
incorporate the search engine and Facebook phenomenon that was discussed. It definitely does not need to be its own distinct thing. I thought of that for number 7.
Right. Okay. Okay, so that's sort of just to make sure we capture that thread. That's a good point. Okay, good. Can we move on to the next topic, or do people have any other comments on this? Let's move on to the next topic then. So. The next sub question topic we're now moving on to the safeguards bucket, and this starts off with the GATS safeguards and then moves on to the technical safeguards. And these sub questions here, really map the GAC advice. This was not a sort of a rocket science list of sub questions. This is really just trying to map the advice as given and then ask, has the advice been implemented? The challenge is answering the question rather than asking it. But that said, go ahead, Drew.
Drew, for the record, I was wondering, with that introduction, do you think going through the exercise as it's listed answers the really basic question we have to answer for this section, which would be, what were the issues? Just because of the way the mandate issues worded. So there were issues that the safeguards were attempting to mitigate, and as Carlos has brought up, attempting to mitigate before the fact so that they didn't come to fruition. So how do we answer what were the issues? Does that need to be its own distinct question first, or do you think that would be answered by going through what's listed under 1?
I'm wondering where we would look to other than where do you think you find the answer to the question you're posing, Drew?
I think if we are looking at these, since these are GAC safeguards we're looking at, I'm thinking we would look to the GAC communiques for, no?
I just know from...
And you're the expert on this, not me, sir.
Right, and I'm the expert to the extent that, yeah, I've looked at these issues, and I've been in GAC sessions for a little while now, although probably not as much as some in the room. But the communiques do not necessarily list why certain advice is given. They list the advice, and I know, and Carlson, we know that that's been a critique of the communiques. But that said, I don't think, in fact, I can tell you definitively you will not find a lot of language in the GATT communiques about why the advice is given. You will find the advice.
Okay, then my alternative approach is that we use the language, I think you'll, or oh, I guess it would be at the top of the document. Alice, do you mind going all the way up to the first page?
The safeguard expectations, so you back out of the expectations.
No, there was the language you pasted. Scroll up more. Well, I know you are scrolling. There's the delay. I guess go to the very top, and then from there I'll be able to see. Contemplate.
You're going to help by giving you a hard copy.
So I'm thinking then it would just be what's in the parentheses.
Is this easier? Or?
Yeah.
Competition, consumer protection, security, stability, resiliency.
Never mind. that's too broad. But that is what it is. Yeah, we have to articulate that.
That's boilerplate.
It is boilerplate. Okay, so the alternative approach, the alternative to the alternative, is that instead we go back to what I was, the other thing I was asking was, does the current list at hand already take care of that? And so I guess what we need to do is create sub-questions to that list, a point under each one of those safeguards listed, where we're describing, which we've already done in our charts, but we're describing the issue that was meant to be mitigated by that safeguard, as we're describing if it's been implemented or not.
What I hear you saying is, as we write about this, we describe to the extent we can what risk these safeguards were intended to mitigate. Is that okay?
Yeah. I just don't want it written in a vacuum, I guess.
Right. That makes perfect sense.
Okay.
Well, sometimes it will be, and sometimes I think it'll be obvious. So maybe just on top in a bracket, right before one, have as a reminder to identify risk intended to be mitigated. Does that make sense? Is that basically what you want to make sure we capture there, Drew?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Other comments about this long list of safeguards. Good.
You have them all listed out nicely. Then you can read them.
Any other comments or thoughts about this? Fabro.
Just commenting on the wording implemented.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're doing three types of questions. If they have been implemented,
mm-hmm.
if they are working, and if they are sufficient. When we say implemented, we're just saying the first level question is,
right.
Have we implemented? I think it's as far as we can go for these questions, but just to make sure that this is implemented. If they included a wording in a contract, and the contract is signed by all, I consider implemented.
Mm-hmm.
If they included a metric that record this information. This information is publicly available and use it for some purpose, implement it. Just to clarify, implement it, we just say that they execute it, but not necessarily it's working or enforced and so on.
That's why we make the distinction.
Right, and I think that's a fair point, that implemented is just at this first level, and I think that's why the discussion papers, you know, as we move through the sequence, we'll see the next level, to use the language that you're using, Fabro, is complied, and then the final level, to the extent we're able to have data to reach that, would be this concept of effectiveness. Mm-hmm. So I think we're on the same page. So I'm seeing people are in need of a break to stand up and move around. So why don't we take our break a little early, which means we'll come back early. I'm not bestowing another gift of time. I'm just bestowing a gift of earliness. So let's take a break. Let's take a break and come back at 3:15. Yes? Yes.
So no BED meeting.
No BED.
What's bed meeting.
Right. No. Right. I don't think you'll have time for another quick siesta. Okay. Before we start recording, let's just have a word about how we're going to spend the rest of our time. So we basically have till 4:30. What I'd like to do is move through these questions as expeditiously as we can. And then leave, let's say, then at 4:15, Alice, what I want to do is turn the recording off and then have a discussion among the subgroup about what's working well and what could be improved, so we can incorporate that into our future phone calls and communications and face-to-face meetings. So I want to leave that time. Okay, so let's resume. And I think we had captured this discussion of safeguards, and I want to loop back just to and we can start recording. So we're back after the break. We had talked about our safeguard questions, which are one of our longer segments. But I also want to loop back to something that Fabro had identified, which is that to a certain extent, David, can you catch the door for me? To a certain extent, some of our questions we're going to be able to answer based on hard data. And some questions we may discover that although we thought we had data, actually the answer may be more speculative or soft or mushy, whatever word you want to insert. So what I want to emphasize is that as this process continues and we're actually writing things up, and we started writing things up in our discussion papers, that it may be that certain of these questions drop out. So those are assessments we're going to continue to make. So with that said, I thought we can move to... Did you have a question, Calvin? No. Okay. I thought we could move to... to Calvin's questions about technical safeguards, and I think Calvin's taken an approach similar to mine, which is basically asking the top-level question, have these technical safeguards been implemented? So if folks have any feedback for Calvin, now's the time. Although, frankly, this strikes me as one of the more blessedly straightforward topics that we have. Any comments? Drew?
Sorry, this is Drew for the record. Alice, if you wouldn't mind, could you please, if everybody agrees, I was thinking we should just paste the same verbiage we have above for the other list about paying attention to what the what risks the safeguards were intending to mitigate. We should have that here too.
That's the beginning of the GAC safeguards before the first question even. About what risk was the safeguard intended to mitigate? No, we don't have to move anything. It's just including that bracket, repeating that bracket for this technical safeguard. So everything stays the same. And then scrolling down, this gets to this gets to the next level. We have implementation, and now we're at compliance. So Fabro and the group, given the discussions we have, are these the questions, the sub questions we want to ask under this topic, which we've asked about were the safeguards implemented, and now we're at the compliance level.
Okay, so we're probably going to need to rephrase all of them because this is an old Fabro version of it. But I think the first question is descriptive. What are the safeguards with or without compliance? We know which ones have been implemented, and now here we discuss which ones register operators, DTLD operators are complying with. And then the second question is about categorization. What are the safeguards we've complied with most, that most protect the public? And then the DNS report, the DNS abuse report, brings four categorization, four major questions that I think we could use to categorize here. So if we have one category where none of the safeguards have been used, then we are unprotected. If we have one of the four not complied with, we're not that all unprotected. But it will be hard to discuss which one most protect the public, because we would have to speculate on the impact they would have or how they would work next to each other. So I'm not sure if you have the best wording for that, but I think it's important to discuss public protection. And then what circumstances explain the lack of compliance, this is where we start to understand if we have problems, we start to understand why these problems come about. So we have safeguards that have not been started yet. We have two versions, but there are no timeline of debates. That's one circumstance. It might be a U-turn here and there, or it might be just lack of compliance. So it's kind of putting in context the lack of compliance. Want to go? Yeah. And then the other question is about ICANN's role. So what is ICANN's contract compliance role in enforcing safeguards? And then ICANN's role here, we specified here with contract compliance role, which I'm not sure if it's a necessary specification we need, but the idea is because of the relationship with the operators, it's mostly enforced through contracts to prioritize analyzing the contract's compliance role and how the safeguards were implemented and so on. It might be a good idea, it might not be a good idea. So, in short, is this, we describe the compliance, we categorize it so we can have an understanding of how the public is being protected or not. We contextualize the circumstances like compliance, and we analyze ICANN's role in it. Basically, these are the four questions.
Did you have a comment, Carlos?
I would go just in the other sequence. My vision or my experience from that is that safeguards are a categorization exercise that you mentioned second, but it's not just any type of categorization. It's driven by a big black hole. We have an icon that we always hover around, which is the public interest. Okay. So it's a categorization for these sensitive areas that we have. So I in the case of the GAC advice based safeguards as we define like that, I would tread it, assume that this categorization is different anyhow, but is driven by this mantra. Okay. And keep it separate from, I don't know, do we have other safeguards not initiated by GAC? No, we have safeguards. It's all
There are the GAC safeguards. There are the technical safeguards.
The technical safeguards.
Yeah.
Okay, that applies just for the GAC safeguards. So I would put more emphasis in your second point, which is this way of categorizing for a purpose which is the public interest. And then we can go, and I would love to then have the discussion, is this a public interest issue or not? And then we can defer free for all, but I would prefer to frame it that way. It's not that I'm trying to put you in a box, but...
Carlos, just a...
Maybe one idea is, the second question is, what are the safeguards of compliance that most protect the public? So we're addressing the issues. And then the second question is, what are the safeguards of compliance that most address the stakeholders' concerns? Where GAC, by far, is the largest stakeholders, but we don't forget the other four ones who made comments and somehow are represented in the implication of the safeguards. I haven't read the documents. I read when I was doing the review of the documents, I noted four or five stakeholders that are supposed to meet the documents. I haven't reviewed the documents to see if they created something that was implemented as a safeguard, or maybe they just replicated GAC's comments. I'll take a look on that.
So I'm struggling a little bit here to make sure that I understand the questions being asked. Because if we're going to have discussion papers that talk about what the previous to this.
Yeah.
We're going to have discussion papers that talk about, that introduce the safeguards, so to speak, and then talk about whether they've been implemented. And then you, in this segment, will focus on whether there's been compliance. So when you're asking, what are you asking when you say what are the safeguards with and without compliance? I just want to make sure I understand what your intent is there.
Let's say you're not supposed to use orphan glues, and then glue offers, and then you do. So one out of 100 does it.
Okay, so we're talking about the data would be complaint rates, for example, which we have data on from ICANN compliance.
So who is not complying and why, and what are the
factors?
Well,
I'm jumping at because it's... what data are you proposing to look at to ask why are you going to, for example, if you see a complaint from someone, are you proposing it's our task to go to them and say, why weren't you complying?
We have solid metrics for some of them.
We have solid, okay, so give me an example. I know we have complaint numbers, but what do we have beyond that in terms of our data?
DNSSEC deployment, for example.
Mm-hmm.
9 out of 1,202 are not compliant.
Right.
So we can look at this 9 and understand the factors that might be related to the
non-compliance. How do we do that?
Good question, because it would be 9 different questions.
Which I think gets us into a level of detail that...
We don't want to go?
Well, it's not that we don't want to go. It's that we don't have all the time in the world, and
yeah.
I don't know that we can... I think we have to decide... We have to prioritize what we can do with the data we have and what's the best use of our time and resources. So when I hear you describing an inquiry to go to, you know, for example, look at the 9, I'm thinking, gee, that's going to involve a lot of time and resources and effort. And is that the level of detail we want to get to? And if we're going to do that for this, would we be doing it for everything? And that seems to me to be making our mandate humongous. And I'm not sure that's really where we want to be putting our focus. That's just my initial reaction to it. Drew,
for the record, I'm wondering if we should get the previous safeguards discussion paper we were looking at up on the screen to see if we could add any or tweak any sub-questions that we discussed this morning,
yep,
that would meet some of what you want to find out with this. Because I, from what I'm understanding, aside from, like Lorene said, we can't go too far down the rabbit hole. We just don't have the resources and time, although it would be interesting. But at a bare minimum, it sounds like you would want to know if there are compliance issues that exist, and then you would want to know if something is being done about those compliance issues, or maybe even if there are, if we find that there's one specific safeguard that there are tons of compliance issues with, we'd want to know why is that, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering if we might be able to actually answer all of this and just consolidate all of this into the previous paper, but with under the that enforcement category recreated, and then if there might be some sub-question that's more compliance-specific that you might want to add to that, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to picture exactly what questions you're referring to.
So I think we would just, Alice, can you scroll up to the prior list of questions on the GAC safeguards? So I think that's just the I think that's the 1 through 6 is the GAC safeguards, and then that's followed by Calvin's technical safeguards. And these are all implementation questions. How are they implemented? How are they implemented? How are they implemented? And I think what I hear, sorry, not using the mic, I think what I hear Drew saying is that maybe the next step in our sequence would be, once we know how they're implemented, to make the inquiry about enforcement by looking at the compliance data. And then if there are certain, and we would know this from the compliance data, there may be categories of large numbers of complaints, much larger than other things. And I can tell you, because I've looked at that, that you're going to find a lot of complaints in the who is category.
Yeah,
you will find less in the DNS abuse category comparatively. So it may be that there's something further that comes out of that data, because we have information about numbers of complaints, and that may be worth exploring further. So I don't know that we have to come to rest on this now, but I think maybe it requires a little further thought about how we're going to get at this compliance. Go ahead, Drew.
Drew again, for the record. Yeah, part of my thought with putting your inquiry under this is we're going to be largely looking at the same data anyway in this exercise. So then we would be drawing different or going down different paths of inquiry by incorporating some of your questions from the current standalone discussion paper into this. Unless, is there anything other than the compliance data that you can think of if you're not doing those, like you were originally suggesting, those individual interviews?
Do we need the paper of mine, or shouldn't we just include it as a subtopic?
I think we need the topic of compliance covered. So I think that topic needs to be covered. I think the topic needs to stay. Whether we organizationally put it as the next question or not, I think it's okay just analytically to keep it as its own question. At the end of the day, I think it's all one's going to follow the next. So analytically, I think it would be okay to keep it as a high-level question, have they been complied with, but maybe it doesn't need a whole bunch of sub-questions. Maybe the issue is really going to be circumscribed by the data we have, which, as I understand it, primarily lives with ICANN compliance. And maybe after you have more of an opportunity to look at that data, you can decide what is the limited number of sub-questions we really need to tackle for that. I don't think this needs to be a huge thing. I think probably the data for this topic is more limited than with others.
Me? Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Why don't we put as a, and it sounds like a, did I use like a, is this an old version of your questions anyway? Okay,
yeah.
So apologies for that. So would it make sense then to take these, let me ask you, Fabro, since you've done the hardest thinking about this. What sub-questions should we put here as a placeholder in light of this discussion?
The first one, what are the safeguards with or without compliance, will be addressed in the other piece.
Okay,
so
that can come out.
That can come out. What are the safeguards with compliance that most protect the public? Although we can create a categorization here, there's already another one there. So it will be addressed there, so it might come out as well.
Okay.
What circumstances explain the lack of compliance? This one is not there because we don't have any questions about the compliance of DTLD's operators there. So we could add a descriptive questions at the beginning saying, what are the obligations of GTLD operators, but it will be covered when you say them before.
Right. So that would probably come out also.
That would probably come out if you put it there. And what is ICANN's compliance role in enforcing safeguards? It will all depend on the data.
Right. So I think that probably is our key question. What's the role and what does the compliance data tell us about the enforcement of the safeguards?
Yep.
So let's keep that there, subject to further refinement. And I think that is going to be informed by really looking at the compliance data. And again, to the extent that you need to have any conversations with ICANN compliance, they are very cooperative in chatting with us and Tadetta is a good point of contact for those issues to the extent you need any explanation or further information. And then I think this will develop further.
And one question. When I'm talking about safeguards here, so we're talking about the previous 9, or we're talking about all the universe of, for example, GECs, safeguards suggested or originally suggested?
I think we're talking about both the GAC safeguards and the technical safeguards because those are incorporated in the contract, and that's what ICANN compliance has the role of enforcing, the provisions of those contracts.
Yep.
Does that make sense? Okay. So now we come to Carlton, which you had also focused on procedures to enforce safeguards, and you had focused on the safeguards that are living within specification 11, more specifically. So not all the safeguards live there, but a lot of them do live there. So let's talk about these sub questions because it seems to me that you and Fabro probably want to join forces here so that perhaps there's a division of labor between this focus on the specification 11 safeguards and enforcement of those, and the other safeguards. So I think you both need to work together to make sure that you're dividing this up and approaching it consistently. Yeah?
Carlton, for the record, we did agree that we would look at all of the, we know there's Category 1, Category safeguards, and all of those Category 1 safeguards, they were implemented in different ways, the different channels. There's the registry agreement, and then there's the registry registrar agreements, and there's the registry registrant agreements, and if you go through the safeguards, you'll see where they have been implemented in those various instruments. So we'll go through the categories and look at them. Out of those categories, there are some procedures that came out of the PICDARP being one of them, just one. And then we can, those are the ones we're talking about, really. So we'll look at those and see whether they've been booted. Did anybody invoke them? If so, what is the result? And so on. So that's how we'll work through that. It's a triage.
Right. So then given that, this will be a particular focus on specification 11. Are these the sub-questions that we should be asking vis-a-vis enforcement of specification 11? So that's the topic on the table.
I would be interested to know if you can break down that first question. Is this grouping appropriate? And probably the constituent elements, I don't know.
I think it's I wonder if that's within our mandate. Because I think if we're starting from the question, we can ask ourselves and think about, okay, this is what the GAC advice was, this is how it's been implemented, and that's within our mandate. I wonder if it really is within our mandate then to say, well, should they have given this advice, or should they have given other advice? It seems to me then we're in the
Okay.
So. Can you? Microphone, I'm sorry.
Recall the use of the term appropriate there is in the context of the risk mitigation.
Mm-hmm.
So they have these safeguards. We're trying to link them back to some specific risk that was identified that you should guard against.
Right.
And so they should become, if there is evidence that they were invoked, the procedures were invoked, were they effective in mitigating the risk identified?
Okay.
That's what that is supposed to do. So I'm asking you in my own mind, that's what I would do.
So then I think we need to rephrase that to capture this concept that you're identifying. How would we do that? Keeping in mind that we're talking about enforcement. And this is something, this may be something that requires some further thought. And maybe what we put down here as a placeholder, Carlton, is to take these out for now. I mean, you have them in your discussion paper. They're not going to be lost they're not going to disappear. But to take these out for now and replace it with a bracket, which is how we tie the enforcement of the specification 11 of how we tie the enforcement of specification 11 to the risks the specification 11 safeguards were intended to mitigate. That's what I'm hearing you identify. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah. This is because I'm looking at public interest impact. So when you talk about impact, that's what you're talking about. So I back that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And back out a little bit and say, okay, well, this is the impact. Were they spot on?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we have to go through a triage to identify the risks and whether or not they came to fruition.
Mm-hmm. And how?
Which is why the process procedure was triggered.
Right. Right. Yep. So for now, let's take this out, take these questions out, and let's replace it with text that I think Carlton is gonna further process. And I haven't forgotten about you, Carlos. Yeah, go ahead. Mike.
Yes, this is Carlos. Sorry, from my perspective, the list is too long. So I agree that there are some insurance and finance and health that are regulated.
You're talking about the GTLD list?
No, about the safeguards. But there are other safeguards like kids or something like that that I think, well, so from my perspective, a question in Carlton's director that questions if the list isn't too long, would generate comments and so on. That I would be interested in, but that's a personal bias.
Okay. We all have our personal biases. Let me move back to that in a minute. But for now, let's take out that language, delete it, and let's replace it with a bracket that says tie enforcement of specification 11 safeguards to risks specification 11 safeguards were intended to mitigate. And then you can put some flesh on the bones of that, Carlton, in terms of sub-questions that relate to that. That way it captures this impact that we're talking about. I'm thinking that's where the sub-questions need to flow from. What were the risks the safeguards were intended to mitigate, and then was the enforcement effective in mitigating those risks? And then I think you can approach the issues, you know, that you're interested in and that you've identified, i.e., for example, the PIC drip, if that process is too cumbersome, or as written, or if no one invokes it in the first place, what does that tell us about the process? Does that make sense?
Yeah, but that's how it is now.
That's only in part. I'm just using that by way of an example.
So that's how it is now. So what I want is that I need help with the sub-questions.
Right, I know. Right, which I don't. I think we're struggling a little bit with that, and maybe we need to give that further thought. I don't know that we're going to come up with a list of sub questions right now. Carlos, as to your question with your point regarding the long list of highly regulated or sensitive strings. I mean, I think that's related. It's not a safeguard per se. It's just that the certain safeguards were only applicable to this list of safeguards that were deemed either in sensitive categories or highly regulated categories.
Yes, but following what you just said just now, I I think it makes a lot of sense, like in financial sector. Why? Because there is a worldwide cooperation in financial transactions. There is a common regulation across the world. There is cooperation mechanism for following money laundering and things like that. In that sense, compliance of something like that is easy. Other ones are more aspirational, you know, like kids, yes, but the Catholic Church doesn't make priests comply, things like that. So it's a mess. I mean, yes, I think in some the compliance is good, but because there is a global understanding and a common approach to try to regulate that. So I would expect a better case than other ones, which are just, yes, it's good because the United Nations worries about that, but it's impossible to track compliance of something that it's important, but there is no
right.
There is no global system, there is no global understanding, there are no global mechanisms and so on. So I don't want to put ICANN in a bad light because
right.
There is no compliance in human trafficking or something. It's really out of the remit.
So I think you get at an issue of what data do we even look at to get at compliance, which I think reinforces some of the discussions we've been having, which is we're going to have issues that we have hard data on, i.e. complaint numbers, and then we have to decide, at least for our purposes as the first CCT review team, where do we draw the line? So I think that you point to the delineation between what we have data on and what we can report on, and then where it becomes too, it's opinion, it's wishy-washy, it's speculation. That's not to say that it isn't important, but we're not going to be able to come up with something very solid on that. Okay. So that's kind of that's a placeholder. That's going to be on, Carlton and your team, not just Carlton, but how we populate the sub questions there. Let me, I'm looking at the time. Carlton, what I'm going to add to your to-do list just as the lead, but not the only person working on this, is to schedule a conference call with your colleagues on this discussion paper topic. To even if you just spend a half an hour brainstorming, I think that would be valuable to help populate this, because we have data, so we know where the data lives on this, and I think it's more a matter of just coming up with the sub-questions so we can have a narrative on this. Does that make sense, Carlton? Okay. Okay, so for six, this I think mirrors the issue that we've just been discussing in some point, which is this identification of the risks and then whether the safeguards actually address those risks, and here it's through the lens of DNS abuse. So this is the topic that Drew and colleagues are tackling. So let's take a look at this and see if we have feedback for Drew on whether these are the questions that are in our mandate, the questions we have data for, and whether and how they can be refined. So feedback for Drew. Drew, why don't you start?
I have feedback for Drew.
So
now I'm wondering, based on, and I'm forgetting the questions as far as like what I'm referencing, but earlier this morning we already looked at something that pretty much accomplishes this now, right?
We looked at this in terms of we have identified the safeguards already. So I think here then the subsection is again through the lens of DNS abuse, where there are particular safeguards that focused on the risk of DNS abuse, and maybe that's where we need to have. What we need is a starting point here, as opposed to this more general question.
Did we already look at? Did we already have this up on the screen at one point, though? Because I just remember when Carlos and I were talking about price as a factor and these other things. I guess that's what I'm.
We were looking
wondering
at.
Wondering what
were,
looked
we
very
We were looking
very
at that when we were talking about data sources.
Oh, okay, sorry. That's what I was getting confused about. Okay, so then. Yeah, so then this mirrors exactly what we're trying to solve with Carlton's. Yes, so I welcome feedback.
Fabra. Did you have a comment? Yeah?
Just, on my paper, when I was talking about safeguards, I was with my mind just about DNS abuse. So in my mind, all the safeguards I was working with, DNS abuse. But if I understood correctly, that piece should understand broadly the contract. Not only DNS abuse, but safeguards more broadly.
Yes? Yes.
So now I understand why you said, but how are we going to make it? I said, well, yeah.
Okay.
Problem tying up the bits and pieces so it fits in with Drew's and mine, because they all come together there somewhere.
Yeah.
So we're gonna have to figure it out.
Now you understood, yeah.
This is Drew again for the record. Okay, so for this section, my intention was to get the data from the DNS abuse study. And then from there, start looking at those correlations, which is obviously, as we discussed earlier, not the same thing as causation, but look at those correlations. And from there, we will be able to analyze any relationship between different categories of TLDs, such as those falling under voluntary PICs, those being restrictive, those using certain registrars, et cetera, we can go through all of that and have that analysis here. So I'm wondering if for this one, maybe this one should come first before Fabra the Carlton's papers, because this would be more of an attempt at taking quantitative data and seeing where that quantitative data matches up with categories. And then maybe both of your papers are more, doing a deeper analysis of what that might mean and whether, in that intention piece you guys are looking at.
Carlton, Mike, microphone.
Thank you, Carlton, for the record. I think there's two parts to it, Drew. There's the part, you did the quantitative piece, but there's the part that identifies what the categories are, and then state what their intentions were. Then you do the piece that does the analysis, the analytical piece, and we tie it into the end to see whether or not it was achieved. That's how I view it. Right? It seems to flow that way to me.
Yeah. DNS abuse is one of the things that we're going to be looking at, because we're going to be looking at the broader spectrum. So it makes sense that the DNS abuse comes after.
So just scrolling up, what I hear the conversation talking about is a sequence issue right now. So let's see what our sequence is here. Can you scroll down a little bit? Because this, yeah. So here we have the trustworthiness, and then under two, I think is where these things are living. Okay, so. Can we get back to two? No, where you were before, Alice, you had it in the right place. So here, has the new GTLD program put sufficient mechanisms in place? Okay, so have the safeguards, so let's look at this. Have the safeguards and rights protection mechanisms been fully implemented, processed? Have the GTLD operators complied? What was the impact of the new safeguards and DNS abuse? Does that strike you as the right place for it? C. 2C. That actually does strike me as the right place for it. Yeah, I think that's the right place. Yes, Drew? Okay. So now, I'm sorry, Alice, we're doing all the degree of difficulty with the scrolling is becoming higher and higher. Let's go back then to this. Now we're really just focusing, Drew, on the questions. Given this place and sequence that we've now reminded ourselves of, are these the right sub-questions? And what I'm wondering, Drew, is, this is probably duplicative, what were the new safeguards. We're already going to have identified that. What types of DNS abuse did they intend to prevent? We're already going to have identified that also because we now have it incorporated in our list that for each safeguard we are going to try and identify what risk it was intended to prevent. So that strikes me as something we can take out because it will already be covered. Then what instances of DNS abuse did the safeguards prevent? That implies a causality. I'm wondering what data you think we're going to be. I think we're going to find data that has a correlation. I don't know that we're going to have data that gives causality. Do you have a different understanding of the data you think we're going to be getting on this?
I think you're right. It'll only be correlation, not causality. So that would need to be reframed. What I was attempting to do with that question was give us an opportunity to highlight if in fact there was a type of we found there were certain types of TLDs in which there were no abuse, then we might be able to say something about certain safeguards if we knew that those TLDs fell into, like they had a very common safeguard in place, like voluntary picks or, I don't know, or they're all restricted, or, I mean, I doubt that's going to be, but it.
Why do we not use these questions?
These, to me, though, sound like end questions that we may find out as a result of the data, not a beginning question. So what I would suggest, and then I'll hear from David and Carlos, what I would suggest is for now, take that out, and then I like the sequence you have of what is the rate of abuse, legacy, new GTLDs, what factors. It seems to me then you're going to tee up your conversation for any reflections we may have based on the findings the data shows us. You may then have some causes that you're able to identify, maybe not, at least correlations. But it seems to me that it's at that point that you're going to get at the question you started with. But you can't start with that question. You may end with answers to that question. So then David and Carlos also had comments.
afternoon, David. It was just you were searching for a TLD without abuse, posing that question there, and I just thought, well, we've got pretty much all the DOT brands arguably not going to have any abuse because no one's going to be able to abuse them because they're all closed for brands. So got 228 of those today and more of those. So, I mean, it's a large example, and obviously it's an example of TLDs, which we talked about earlier, are trusted. So...
Yes, I like the way Drew just said it, that it's a very specific look at a very specific comparison if some safeguards really resulted in lower, so it's a relative one, if these restricted ones resulted in lower abuse, but I also agree with you that's not a question in this list. That's one thing we should be looking for at some point. But that's I think it avoids this causality discussion and so on. And so no. We have we want to test if it worked. Maybe we won't have the numbers this time, but keep looking for that one. That I think it's a very very specific question that might end up being a recommendation.
Recommendations that are specific.
Then can we scroll down so we see the full 3 and 4? Okay. So then you move on to looking at the legacy GTLDs, and this goes back to the issue that Jordan has identified and that we spent a lot of discussion on yesterday in the plenary session, which is when you're looking at all these issues, the big picture here is not just the GTLD program alone, it's the effect of the new GTLD program on the whole ecosystem. And so it strikes me, Drew, that these next questions really go to that issue, looking at the rate of abuse of legacy GTLDs before and after the introduction of the new GTLDs. Which strikes me as important questions that your DNS study would be able to collect data on.
Drew, again, for the record, yes. So, So on the one hand, I want to look at correlation between, or I guess basically what I want to do is, answer, were there any common factors of the new GTLDs with relatively low rates of abuse versus those with relatively high rates of abuse? So that's one area. And then the other one is this overall impact on the DNS as a whole. And I'm thinking the best way to look at the overall impact of the DNS as a whole with regard to abuse is to do this comparison of abuse rates over time. And I think that is going to be our best way of drawing some conclusions about that.
Before we leave off this topic and close off our formal session, let's at least just incorporate in this document so that we have it under PICS, which is the next issue, leaving the DNS abuse issue, to have these sub-questions on PICS, which will be right after 4, Alice, if you scroll down. Right. If we can put there in the beginning, when we're working on refining these sub-questions, it strikes me, Carlton, that number three actually Drew is already going to capture based on the discussion that we just had, yes? So I think that falls out. I think that just, yeah, that gets, that can be deleted. And then for one and two, I think what we had talked about, Carlton, as suggested by Fabro, that the construct we want to focus on here is, right, is the categories. Is the public interest commitments applicable to all GTLDs? The public interest commitments applicable to the sensitive and highly regulated strings, and then the voluntary public interest commitments. So can we replace these sub-questions with this construct? And then again, I think Carlton, elaborate. Okay, so maybe then, do we want to put it at the, I just want to have a placeholder there for you. Tell me where you want it to go, right above it? Okay, so above it, Alice, let's have a bracket. Let's have a bracket that has a direction to categorize the public interest commitments by type, e.g., all GTLDs, sensitive and regulated GTLDs, and then voluntary public interest commitments GTLDs that incorporated voluntary public interest commitments, if we want to keep it parallel. And so for the second category, Alice, after all GTLDs, we're going to have sensitive and highly regulated GTLDs. So right after all GTLDs. Okay. Good. So we're gonna end this session and Josh, that's okay. So we're going to end and stop the recording.